Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, hello. This is Caroline Sinisa Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start and host for today's episode of the Six Figure Start Career Coaching Radio Show. Six Figure Start is a career coaching firm dedicated to helping you build fulfilling and financially rewarding careers. Joy and money are not mutually exclusive. You can earn a great living doing work that you love. Six Figure Start is comprised exclusively of former Fortune 500 recruiters, so our approach is based on inside knowledge into what companies are really looking for. And today's episode is all about negotiation. I had the great fortune of presenting at the Women's Leadership Conference, which is organized by the Barnard Athena Center and Columbia Business School. And a number of questions I specifically presented a workshop on learning to ask or negotiation. And so the questions that came up through the workshop were really, really great. I wanted to dedicate this episode to answering those questions so that not only the participants, but everybody could benefit from the robust discussion that occurred. And so since there were 11 questions and we have just a half an hour together, I want to jump right in. So the first question I think is something that comes up for a lot of folks, which is basically one of the participants noted that negotiation feels like a weakness for her. This is not something that is a skill she's comfortable with. And so what can she use to get better at it? What type of framework, what strategies, what tips? And so overall, I would say that I would think the majority of folks don't necessarily feel comfortable with negotiation. It's not something that we feel like we do often enough, although difficult conversations are negotiations. Negotiation isn't just salary negotiation. We negotiate our relationships, our deadlines, our resources. We negotiate how people treat us. We negotiate expectations that people have for us. And we negotiate, you know, our expectations on others. So we negotiate a lot more than just salary and title and some of the things I think that people associate with negotiation. And so we do it more often than we think, but probably not often enough that we feel like we can be experts at it. So the framework that I give folks is to really, really focus on the preparation. And I'm going to link to a number of resources when I post this episode to my blog. I'm going to link to a number of resources because there's no way that I could talk about all of these nuances of negotiation even within a half an hour and certainly within the boundaries of this question. But I would say that the framework that you want to use is to really, really think through your preparation before the negotiation and not try to wing it. And things that you do in preparation are things like building your case, collecting the market data so you know what other folks are doing, if it's about salary, what other companies are paying, if it's about, let's say, resources, what other projects have been able to get in terms of resources. Preparation also includes building your own personal case. You know, what are your results? What are your accomplishments that you're bringing to the table that the person you're negotiating with really needs to understand so that they value what you're bringing? Preparation also includes practice. So actually practicing the negotiation, which we do not do enough of. So I'm going to list the 7-step process to preparing for negotiation. This is the framework that I suggest that everyone use, not just if you recognize negotiation as a weakness, but in general. Second question, how do you negotiate better for yourself when you feel like you're good at it, but for other people? Now, this is actually quite common, and a resource, again, I'm going to link to it, that I recommend. There's a great, great book on negotiation, which is called Negotiate Anything by Caring But Not Too Much. And so, again, I'll link to this book because it actually talks about this phenomenon where it is easier to negotiate for other folks because your livelihood isn't riding on it, your reputation isn't riding on it. The stakes are obviously higher when you're negotiating for yourself. And so one of the ways, frankly, that I've found that you can learn how to negotiate better for yourself is in that preparation because you are building an objective case. It enables you to stay more emotionally removed from the outcome. It doesn't devoid you of emotion, of course, and devoid you of caring, and you do want to care and advocate for yourself very, very vigorously. But in the preparation, really looking at what your arguments are, really brainstorming on what the constraints are for the other person and what creative alternatives there might be, again, that enables you to look more objectively at things, and so you can take some of the personal emotion out of it. And I think that is going to be, again, the most helpful way of negotiating for yourself, but still maintaining, you know, an arm's length so that you can look rationally and you can speak rationally and confidently about what it is that you're asking for. Third question, how do you not sound desperate when you are negotiating for something that you really want? So one of the steps to preparation, one of the seven steps, is increase your leverage. Leverage is what enables you to walk away from a deal. It's what enables you to say, you know what, I don't have to make this deal. I might choose to make this deal. I might choose to compromise. I might choose to give something up. I might choose to accept an offer that I hadn't anticipated initially, but I don't have to. That is actually how you sound and appear and become not desperate, right? Because you don't have to take something. So the most obvious example of leverage is when you have another offer, so you don't have to take the offer that's in front of you, right? So let's say that this is a job offer situation and you're gainfully employed. You don't have to leave your employer. You'd like to. You're interested in this prospective job, but you don't have to leave. Let's say that you have a savings cushion. So even if you aren't gainfully employed and you are in a job search and it would be better if you had a job right away, you don't have to take the first thing that comes along. You have that leverage. It might be that you have other leads in the pipeline that look promising. They're not at the offer stage like this one, but they look promising. And so you feel confident enough in your search, in the momentum it has, in your skills, that, again, you can walk away from this. So that is how you not sound desperate, right? Is because you aren't desperate, because you have leverage. And again, one of the seven steps is about practice, actually role-playing in negotiation. And this question was specifically around sounding desperate. And so certainly there's a question of becoming not desperate, becoming confident. But again, there's the anxiety and the emotion of the actual negotiation. And you have to practice pushing through that and maintaining your ground. And the best way to do that is by negotiating over and over again, which, like we said before, you don't always come up with a negotiation, and certainly you're not going to come up with multiple negotiations in the same situation with the same person, and so you have to practice it. And you practice not sounding desperate. You practice maintaining your ground. You practice bringing up your items of leverage, even if it's bringing that up to yourself in your mind, so that you don't accept something prematurely, you don't make a compromise you ultimately don't want to make. That's how you not sound desperate. Okay, how do you maintain relationships while still negotiating? So this is a great question, because at the end of the day, you are going to, if this is a job offer situation, you are going to work with these people. If you're negotiating for a raise or a promotion right where you are, you're going to work with these people. If you're negotiating with your spouse, and I actually posted a blog on this about dual career couples deciding on their next career move together, that's a negotiation. And so, of course, your significant other, that's a relationship that you want to maintain. So how do you best do that? Well, again, treating the negotiation like a conversation where you start with points of agreement. Obviously, you're negotiating because there are points of disagreement. If you were 100% in agreement, you would just agree and you wouldn't have to negotiate anything. So negotiation, of course, starts with this notion that there is a disagreement, there is a tension there. However, there are also multiple points of agreement. You want to work it out with this person, otherwise you wouldn't have a conversation. You would just say no, and that would be the end of it. And that's the truth for the other person as well. So the way that you maintain the relationship is by reminding yourself that you do have these points of agreement, by bringing up these points of agreement to the other person and reminding them that, yes, you are in this for the long haul. By being grateful that you're able to have a respectful and open conversation, by using the words thank you in the actual negotiation. And so that, again, you remind yourself and you remind the other person that this is a good situation that you're in. You're talking and you're going to work this out. I also like using the words I'm so excited at the prospect of whatever it is, of starting our careers together, you know, when you're talking to your significant other about making career choices together. I'm so excited at the prospect of working together when it's a prospective employer that you might join. I'm so excited at the prospect of stepping up and taking on this role if you're negotiating with senior management at your very company to move into something bigger. And so, again, you're reminding them of the points of agreement. You're getting them excited at the prospect of the better future. That's really how you maintain the relationship, because it really focuses on that future together as opposed to focusing on perhaps your points of disagreement. And this notion of focus segues very nicely into the next question, which is, how do you keep the focus on value and not sound mercenary? I find that these two questions are related in the sense that, you know, clearly the person who asked it is thinking about, I don't want to come across as cold, as aggressive, as unfeeling, as only caring about perhaps certain items. Mercenary implies only caring about the money, as opposed to this broader focus on value. And so, again, reminding them, thanking the other person for the opportunity to speak to them, for the opportunity to consider working with them, whatever that thing that you're negotiating with. Again, it might be a raise, it might be a project, it might be a job offer, it might be with your significant other on your next career decision. So it's really thanking them for that opportunity to have this conversation. And then also, again, reminding of the future together. And so this is where your value comes in, because you can remind the person about all the things that you bring to the table. I will make one note, and where I think this question differs from the relationship question is this person asked about value versus being mercenary. And, you know, one of the things that I want to highlight, because I do get a lot of job seekers and a lot of people asking about negotiation who are uncomfortable talking about money and somehow feel like talking about money makes it less about value or makes it more mercenary. And these things are not mutually exclusive. In fact, bringing the discussion to money, including what your value is in terms of dollars and cents, is often the best way to communicate value. Because in a lot of, certainly in the business context, it is about the bottom line impact. It is about revenues generated, costs saved. If it's about time efficiency or, say, customer satisfaction, again, that's going to translate to the bottom line. So time efficiency, you know, translates into perhaps labor costs saved, which translates to the bottom line. Customer satisfaction translates into repeat business, into business saved, into larger accounts. Again, revenue. So it does translate to money. And so talking about money doesn't make you mercenary. And in fact, I think that one of the best ways to prepare when I talk about building your case, building your market case, building your personal case, is about translating what your value is to money and not relying on value being some amorphous concept like goodwill or some subjective measure like a qualitative skill or level of expertise. You really want to bring it down into something measurable. Just because something is measurable doesn't make it mercenary. And in fact, again, it's a great way to keep the focus on your value. So since we are talking about numbers here, the next few questions are really all about the numbers. And one of the questions is, how is salary negotiation different from other types of negotiation? So I would say that the mechanics of salary negotiation, you're talking about a job offer. You need to understand the parameters of the offer. You need to understand who in the company that is offering you the position and the salary? Who is making these decisions? Who are you going to be negotiating with? Is it with HR and the internal recruiter? Is it the external recruiter who had introduced you to the company? Is it the manager that you're going to be working for? Is it the head of the division who's the manager's boss or boss's boss? You know, it could be a number of different folks. And so the mechanics of the salary negotiation, you have to understand those particular things versus, let's take another completely different negotiation. I talked about the dual career couple negotiating with each other about a career decision that's going to impact them. Maybe one of them wants to relocate. Maybe one of them wants a career change that's going to drastically change lifestyle for the couple. And so, of course, the issues are going to be different. But what I would argue is while the issues are different and they need to think about their relationship, they need to think about how each other communicates so that when you are, let's say, negotiating with your significant other, you have them in mind, their style, what might be their hot buttons that you want to avoid so you can keep the conversation going, what their constraints are, what their preferences are, so you can brainstorm creative alternatives that are a win for them as well. So you're thinking through things other than, is it the recruiter, HR, or the, you know, obviously the mechanics are different, but the preparation is very, very much the same. And this is why I opened the episode mentioning that it's the preparation for the negotiation that really is going to win the negotiation for you, and which is why I've been mentioning these steps: build your case, collect your market data, collect your personal data, increase your leverage, do a dress rehearsal, brainstorm creative alternatives, right? So you really want to think about those. I mentioned with the spouse thinking about what their constraints are, their preferences, and that's another step in the seven-step process. Research what you're up against. You want to know, you know, what the other person is thinking. And so those seven steps are going to be the same for a salary negotiation and for a negotiation with your spouse and everything in between. You know, what differs in the different types of negotiation, whether it's salary, whether it's with a client, whether it's for a promotion, whether it's with a relationship, what differs are the actual issues at hand, of course, and, you know, possibly the formality of the back and forth that's involved. But again, that seven-step process, and I'm gonna put a link to it, are, you know, that is what is going to help you with the negotiation. What do you do when you're asked for a number? So you want to know what your ideal number is. I mean, you want to go into the negotiation building your case, meaning knowing what you want out of it, and building out your personal performance data so you know what you deserve. Right? And so, of course, you're going to have a number. You're also going to research what you're up against. You're going to try to research and collect market data, right? So you're going to try to think about what the other person is going to come up with for a number. Now, I am not one of these folks who says the first person who says the number loses. I actually don't think that that's the case. The person who calls out the number sets an anchor for the discussion. And so if you're dealing with an employer who possibly has a low number in mind, and you know you're going to need to educate them about the market and where what it will cost to get you, it's better for you to bring up the number so that you set their expectations. Now, the next question is actually related to this, which is, how do you know if a company can afford the salary that you want? This is where that research comes in. You want to look at, can you talk to people who have worked there before? Does this company pay market? You want to look at the history of the company. Are they a startup that's not funded yet, that's being bootstrapped? They're obviously going to have a very different budget than a Fortune 50 company that's been around the block for 100 years, right? So you really want to research what you're up against in terms of the company size, the company history, what you know of people who have worked there. You want to talk to recruiters who have either recruited for this company specifically or who know this industry. You want to have a sense for what these salaries are and whether this is a company that pays competitively. You want to know what their financials are. You want to have a sense for how important whatever it is that you're bringing to the table is to this company, because there's can they afford you, but then there's also, the willingness feature. Do they want to afford you? Do they want to pull whatever resources are together to really make this happen? And again, there might be a sense of urgency for them that's not just about budget, right? It isn't as simple as do they have the budget? It's also do they want to pull this budget together? And that is actually the segue into the next question, which is what is a good comeback to the we don't have the budget excuse? Right? Because sometimes the company says they don't have the budget. Well, I think every time you hear no, you need to think not now. Right? And no is not forever. No is saying no to something very specific. It might be how you made the request. It might be what exactly you're asking for. It might be the timing of the request. And so when you hear we don't have this budget, is there a way that they can combine their budget, perhaps with another group? I've done that as a small business owner. When I've pitched, let's say, a project for an organization, and they say, oh, we don't have the budget to bring you in to facilitate this type of training, but the training would be useful to other parts of the organization, I've gotten several departments to group their budget together so that, yes, they can afford me, and then the reach is much broader. So it's a win-win, actually, for all of us, because then the other departments get to participate. I get reach into, you know, a wider audience, and then, of course, I get my number, and they get, you know, the training that they wanted. So the budget question is really about go back to what is your value, what are they going to get out of it, how can you be more creative? So those brainstorm those creative alternatives. When do you negotiate your compensation? So this is a numbers question, but we're putting a slightly different spin on it. Let's say after you've already been working somewhere else. So you've already accepted an offer. You're there 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or maybe you accepted an offer with the understanding that you would have another conversation later on. Well, if you're going to do that, you definitely want to specify what later on means, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever. But on an ongoing basis, when is it a good time to renegotiate your compensation? When is it a good time to ask for a raise? I mean, there are a few items that you want to consider. How well are you doing, right? Is your value very clear? Are you indispensable? Are you someone that the company wants to retain? So you really want to do a self-assessment, a candid self-assessment about that. You also want to look at what's the process within your company. When do they make these decisions? So you want to time your request for when they can say yes. You know, if they've already made their budget and you ask right after that, the answer is going to be no, just because your timing is off. And so you really want to research the process and find out when those decisions are going to happen, and so you time your decision there, your request there. And then you also want to look at how's the company doing? Are they inclined to say yes to my request? Are they doing really well? Is what I'm working on something that is very important to them, that's a big strategic push for them? Because if that's the case, then, yeah, absolutely, you want to ask now. So these are all examples of reasons why you might ask now. Right? Because, again, the timing is right in terms of a decision-making standpoint. You're doing exceptionally well. The company's doing exceptionally well. What you're doing matters to the company. That's what you need to look at when you think about renegotiating your compensation. And then finally, this was a Q&A round in a Women's Leadership Summit. So, of course, the question of gender and negotiation came up. And someone asked, what tips do you have for women specifically? And here's what I will say about that. I've said this many, many times. You can even see a video clip of me talking about this on CBS, where I talk about women and negotiation. And what I want you all to remember, and listeners, women and men, so men, listen to this. You want to look at what your negotiation style is. You want to look at what your skill level is, how comfortable you feel like with negotiation, how prepared you feel to go into the negotiation. That is a gender-blind assessment that you are trying to do there. I know women who are very, very good negotiators, who are very good at maintaining their ground, asking for what they want, will not back down. I know some men who have confidence problems, who are more introverted, who don't want to ask and don't want to talk about money. And yet, These are, stereotypes. I have to say that I get a lot more women who ask, well, what's the expectation with women in negotiation? And look, like I said, I think that you should focus on your candid self-assessment of your negotiation skills and expertise and your comfort level and how prepared you are. I want to go back to that 7-step process. I do say, there are going to be some folks who expect women, perhaps, for cultural or sociological reasons, are expecting that women aren't going to negotiate as hard. So that is known as the double bind, where women might be perceived as aggressive merely by doing something that if a man asks, he might not be perceived as aggressive. Do I think that that exists? Of course I think that that exists. Do I think that that's very, very common? I haven't seen it in my 20 years of recruiting, in the sense of it being so common that, I can point it out to someone. Again, I think the most important thing is to focus on your own preparation and your own skill level. And I encourage everyone, men and women, to believe that you can increase your skill level, and that when you increase your preparation, you will negotiate better and more effectively. And you don't have to worry so much about, again, the larger sociological and cultural implications. I think you need to focus on your outcome and recognize that a negotiation is that person-to-person conversation, and you want to relate to the other person. So I am going to post a number of different links on my blog when I feature this episode. So I did make reference to a number of different resources. I will post them. And a reminder for folks who are listening to this perhaps for the first time, if you have a question that you would like to see covered in a future episode, send it to us at sixfigurestart.com on the Contact Us page. We'd love to hear from you. You can also access a number of career coaching resources on sixfigurestart.com on the free resources page, which you can find under Work With Us. There are a number of ways to work with us, including free resources. And so that is, you can find that on our site. This is Caroline Sinisa-Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start Career Coaching by former Fortune 500 recruiters. Thanks so much for joining us.